Part 2 of the Trial of Sue Monday.
The Morning Star Ferry docked at 4th Street, where a crowd pressed to see the Confederate outlaw woman, the gorilla, Sue Monday.
Marcellus Jerome Clark, a Confederate soldier and reputed guerrilla fighter, was one of the most colorful characters of the War of the Rebellion. Known as Sue Monday, many thought the young man with long curly hair was in fact a girl guerrilla. Near the close of the war, Clark was captured. He and Henry Metcalf were caring for their wounded comrade, Henry Magruder, in a barn on a Webster, Kentucky farm. Word got to Louisville, and troops were dispatched to effect the capture. Jerome was brought to trial quickly. His execution date was established even before the first witness was called. The first witness in the trial was Major Cyrus J. Wilson, a LaRue County soldier called out of retirement to lead troops to Meade County to catch Jerome Clark and his companions. Major Wilson testified that Jerome opened fire when faced with capture and wounded three of the soldiers who had surrounded the barn. He also testified that Jerome was to be treated as a prisoner of war until he arrived in Louisville, and his only guarantee to Clark was that he would not be killed en route to prison. And now, part two of the trial of Sue Monday. The second prosecution witness is Captain Lewis Marshall, who was about to burn the barn at Brandenburg before Major Wilson had the flag of truce displayed and talked Jerome into surrendering.
What is your name, rank, company, and regiment?
Lewis O. Marshall, Captain, Company B, 30th Wisconsin Volunteer Infantry.
State what you know of the accused Jerome Clark's capture and the circumstances.
He was captured on the morning of the 12th of March, 1865. Now, I approached the house from the front. Well, that's the side the door was on. Well, the men surrounded the house. Well, I mean the barn. Well, they knocked at the door and told them to open it. They didn't do it. Open the door, that is. Now, I told the men to take a chunk of stone and break that door in, which they did. And just as the door fell, someone on the inside fired. Now, I was standing by the side of the door, and they fired in quick succession. Now, I stepped back, and I told the men to go away from the front of the door and shoot any man who attempted to go out. I also told the men to take the chinking out of the wall and then run their guns through and fire. Now, see, I thought this would enable the men to see Monday and his gang from the outside. Then I stepped around the corner of the barn when one of the men standing near me said, "Captain, I'm shot." Now, I asked him where, and he said, "In the foot." And just then, a man called me and said two of the men were badly wounded on the sides, or one of them in the side, the other was in the breast. Now, I asked him where the wounded men were, and he pointed out the direction to me. It was about 30 or 40 feet off. Now, I told my men to watch the building while I went to see how bad the men were wounded. I took half a dozen men and went up to Cox's house and caught two men inside. Now, I asked a Negro, "Who's inside there?" And he told me Cox and his brother. Now, I told him to go tell them to come out. Well, after they came out, we went in and searched the house for arms, and we found two pistols. They were rusty, and they had the appearance of not being used for some time. Now, one of them was loaded with two balls. And we took these men along with us, and on getting near the battle, I saw a flag of truce going up to the house. Well, the barn. It was a handkerchief actually tied to a stick. And I asked one of the men, "Who sent up that flag of truce?" And he said, "Major Wilson." Well, I paid a visit to Major Wilson. Well, just as I saw him, the doctor, Dr. Lewis, came up to me and said Monday was considering a surrender. He went back into the barn and came out again and said they wanted to see me. Well, I went into the barn and the major told Monday who I was. And I said, "Is this Sue Monday?" And then the man replied to me, "I am the man they call Sue Monday." Now, I asked him what he proposed to do, give his arms up or not. And he said, "You'll kill me if I do." And I said, "No, my men would not kill him." He said he was afraid they would, and I said they wouldn't. Now, the major said if Monday were to give up his arms, it would prolong his life a few days, and he told Monday he would be treated with respect as long as he made no effort to get away until he got to Louisville. I didn't make him any promise that he should be treated as a prisoner of war or anything of the kind. Now, he replied he was safe enough with him, Monday with a major, I mean. But Monday said he damn well knew he had to die when he got to Louisville, that he knew there were charges enough to swing him.
Now, what was your reply to this?
I don't remember now.
Well, state what, if any reason, you gave the accused to believe that he was to be treated as a prisoner of war after arriving in Louisville.
I gave him no reason for thinking so at all. I told him I thought he stood a good chance of hanging or something of that kind. There were two of my men wounded. And if that flag of truce had not been sent in, I would have set that damn barn on fire. All right, for your information, my instructions from Colonel Dill were with this Major Wilson, was going under orders from General Palmer, and I should be guided by him.
And how many were there of this party?
All right, there were three of them. It was Magruder, Mundy, and Metcalf.
Who do you mean when you say Mundy?
That man sitting there. Well, he was introduced to me as Sue Mundy.
Is the accused now present in court, the clerk you referred to?
Yes, sir. He is the man who said he was called Sue Mundy.
That's all I have. Thank you, Captain Marshall.
Do you have any questions, Defense Counselor?
Captain Marshall, how did the accused say he came by the name of Sue Mundy?
Well, he didn't tell me right then, but he told me afterwards that there was a girl by the name of Sue Mundy who had stolen a horse, and she started to report that it was him.
Did not the accused say that Prentice gave him the name?
I don't think he did, no.
Did he not say there were three men who went by that name?
He might have said so in the presence of Lieutenant Cassman, and if I was present, I didn't pay any attention to it. I didn't stay there. I got away as soon as I could.
No further questions.
Were these men with any large organized force, Confederate or other troops?
None to my knowledge. The citizen said there were three other bands of guerrillas, or three bands. I wouldn't say other bands. A citizen who rode with the train to haul some worn-out men said it would be a wonder if he were not taken. He said that the night before, a gang of about 18 guerrillas passed his house going toward Brandenburg, and that two other gangs were in the neighborhood. He also said the gangs would be consolidated to take Mundy away from us. Said it would go like wildfire. There were plenty of men who would carry it through.
What was found about the prisoner?
Major Wilson searched him. Revolvers and spurs. There were 8 revolvers altogether. Now, 4 of Magruder's and 4 of Mundy's. Magruder gave his to Major Wilson, and Mundy gave his to me.
There was no mention by Captain Marshall of Jerome Clark's personal effects. He was known to smoke a pipe, and he always wore a silver half moon in his hat. It was a good luck charm.
That's all, Captain Marshall.
The United States calls William Bradley.
Do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
What is your name, rank, company, and regiment?
I'm William M. Bradley, Company A, 14th Illinois Infantry.
William Bradley is an important witness. The government will seek to connect Sue Mundy or Jerome Clark with the shooting of 4 Union soldiers near Newcastle on February 2nd, 1865. The testimony is important because if Jerome was there, William Clark Quantrill, the infamous guerrilla chieftain from Ohio, most probably was not. A series of events on February 2nd, 1865, in North Central Kentucky has kept historians confused. This testimony could shed some light on several dim pages of history.
State if you have seen the accused Jerome Clark, alias Sue Mundy, before, and if so, under what circumstances?
Well, it seems to me I saw that man on the 1st of February, 2.5 miles northwest of Newcastle, Kentucky. When I first saw them, there were about 15 men coming over a hill and through a pasture with about 8 or 10 dogs, when I thought they were Kentucky hunters. As soon as they saw us, one of the men motioned for the rear guard to come up. They came on down to where we were. Now, these ones in front ordered us to surrender and asked what command we belonged to. I told them we belonged with Sherman. They asked how many there were of us. I told them 450. Then they asked if we had any horses. I told them no. They then asked who was ahead of us. Well, a captain who was in command of us and 2 citizens were ahead of us 300 or 400 yards off. I told them and they started as if to take us up the road, but went about 25 yards when somebody halted them. They turned around and went through a gap in the fence on the opposite side of the road and took us 150 or 200 yards up into the field. And then, because we wouldn't double quick any faster, they stopped and shot us right there. A part of the gang had gone on. Some 8 or 10 stopped there and shot us. I couldn't go any faster on account of having a sore in my leg.
Who shot you?
Well, I couldn't say who shot me.
Was the accused one of the party who stopped behind?
Well, I couldn't say as to that. The man who shot me was about as far as from here to that window, about 12 feet. His pistol snapped the first time and he cocked it again. I threw myself down and around on my face. Just as I struck the ground, he fired, and the bullet struck me in the breast, came out about 4 inches below.
And what part did the accused take in this matter?
Well, I don't know that I can tell what part he took. I suppose he was the chief one among them and had ordered it done. I suppose they wouldn't do anything without his orders.
Where is Newcastle?
Well, in Henry County, 4 miles north of Eminence on the railroad that runs from Louisville to Lexington.
That's all I have.
Mr. Bradley, what kind of a horse did the accused ride?
He was on a bay horse, a dark bay.
If I may, sir.
Certainly.
Judge Advocate Coyle seems to want to help the defense counsel with his line of questioning about the man who seemed to be in charge when the four soldiers were shot north of Newcastle. The defense attorney seemed ready to begin a challenge of the witness's identification of Jerome as the man when Coyle interrupted.
How was the accused dressed?
He was dressed very neat, with pretty tolerable light pants and a neat something over his shoulders, all fringed off. Well, I didn't notice particularly.
Did the accused wear his hair long or short?
To the best of my recollection, at that time, it was long.
Longer than it is now?
Well, I couldn't say that it was or was not.
Jerome's hair was shoulder length when he was captured. He had worn his hair long for some time. Quantrill had reddish-colored hair. His hair was not particularly long, and he wore a mustache and sideburns, or what may have been called side whiskers. The defense counsel is going to pursue this further.
Was not the hair of the man curling?
I don't recollect whether it really was or not.
Did the man you saw have a mustache?
No, sir. He was smooth-faced. I would take him to be 19 or 20 years old.
That just about rules out Quantrill. He was 27 years old. Quantrill was about 5 feet 9 to 5 feet 10 inches tall. Jerome is a six-footer.
Was not the man you speak of a smaller man than the accused?
Well, I couldn't say. He was on a horse. Well, I should say he was as small as, if not a little smaller, well, than that man.
Bradley pointed to Jerome Clark.
But that man's features resemble him very much. If he was dressed now the way he was that day, I would say he was the man every time. And the man who shot me, however, had whiskers like mine.
How was the party dressed generally? Were they in any uniform?
Well, they had some of our overcoats on. I couldn't say they were all in their own style of uniform or not.
Who did they say was in command of them?
Well, they didn't tell us. All I know is that he was in command, and Major Russell of the 54th Kentucky was following them and was about 10 or 15 minutes behind them. Now, when they passed us, they said they had been following them for 2 or 3 days and had been about 5 miles behind them all the way. They said they had got misled by their guides, which caused them to catch up a little.
What, was this party dressed in the regular Confederate uniform, any of them?
Well, I think some of them had on gray clothes, but very few.
Were any men killed at the time you were wounded?
Well, none died there, but when we were removed to Newcastle in a wagon, one died about 2.5 miles from that place. He was shot just above the hip bones, and the bullet came out his groin. Well, he died from the effects of the wound.
Did this officer tell you this when he found you on the ground?
When I was in the wagon, he said it while coming to Newcastle.
You may step down, Mr. Bradley.
Hiram Meadows, take the stand.
Now, here's another Union soldier who claims to have had a run-in with Jerome. The testimony by Bradley, if true, means a Kentucky historical highway marker at Midway is probably incorrect. It says Jerome Clark led an attack there February 2nd, 1865, and burned the depot. Well, as L.L. Valentine and some others have noted, it's hardly likely Jerome could have been in Newcastle and burned the Midway depot the same day. However, you must remember, too, that Jerome rode from Greenville, Tennessee to Bloomfield, Kentucky in 8 days as a courier. Let's return to the testimony now. Judge Advocate Coyle is questioning the witness.
What is your name, rank, company, and regiment?
Hiram H. Meadows, Company C, 1st Wisconsin Regiment, Infantry. I'm a private.
Do you know the accused Jerome Clark, alias Sue Monday? When did you see him and under what circumstances?
Yes, sir, I know him. I saw him on the 25th day of December, 1864. My regiment was marching through this part of the state, camped about noon, and my brother and a few H boys went out on our own hook foraging. We got a little too far, and Sue Monday and 10 of his men came up and captured us. We surrendered between 2 and 3 o'clock in the afternoon. They marched us all that day and night and the next day until 10 o'clock. My brother gave out and couldn't go a step further. He said it was no use, he couldn't go any further. One of the men said if he didn't get up, he would shoot him. He couldn't, and the leader of the band, that man there.
Let the record show the witness identify the accused in this reference.
As I was saying, that man there told another man to take my brother to the side of the road and shoot him. And he did shoot him, right before my own eyes. I saw him when he threw his hands back and struck the ground.
Is the man you call Sue Monday the prisoner now in court?
I should take him to be the man, sir.
Where was this?
In the southern part of the state. I can't tell the county. I was never there before. We was just marching through.
As we mentioned earlier, time and place are not material and are limited only by the jurisdiction of the court in these guerrilla trials. Incidentally, historian L.L. Valentine notes that Judge Coyle had placed Jerome Clark at Bloomfield in the testimony of another guerrilla trial, the United States versus Henry C. Magruder, and not on the forced march sworn to by Meadows.
What was done with you after this?
They kept us until the 28th. We camped on that night in the woods. The trees were very thick. We were laying under a large tree when a thunderstorm came up. Now, about 12, or between 12 and 2 o'clock, the guard over us was relieved. When he was being relieved, he turned his back and we took the opportunity, jumped up and ran into the woods. It was very dark. Both guards fired and missed us. We reached and crossed the Cumberland River and went up to Nashville, and from there to the city, there were 10 of them in the gang.
How were they dressed?
Some had on our pants, some citizens' clothes, and some Kentucky jeans. No uniform whatsoever.
Your witness.
What kind of a horse did the accused ride?
A bay horse at that time. Some of his men had very good horses.
What kind of hair did the accused wear?
Thick, long hair. Not quite so long as I think it is now.
Was not the man in command smaller than the accused?
Here again, the defense counsel is trying to establish that the man the witness is referring to was Quantrill and not Jerome Clark. Most historians report Quantrill did not enter Kentucky until late January 1865. But there are reports, such as a John Newman Edwards book, Noted Guerrillas, and newspaper articles, indicating Quantrill may have entered Kentucky around the 1st of January 1865. Meadows again.
I never saw him off his horse. And he was generally riding ahead of us and kept us taking up the rear.
How was his face? With a mustache or clean shaven?
No mustache at that time.
What kind of dress did he wear?
He had on a soldier's overcoat and citizen's pants at the time he captured us. I don't know what was beneath the coat.
How long after your brother was shot did he die?
I couldn't tell. He was shot and we marched right along. The murderer came up afterwards.
You have no doubt whatever of the man sitting before you being the leader of that party? We want you to be certain. Look a bit closer.
I have no doubt whatever but that he is the man. He looks just like the man that captured us.
How far was it from the Cumberland River?
Couldn't tell you. We got away between 12 and 2 o'clock and reached the river about 3 o'clock of the next day. It wasn't the Green River, it was the Cumberland River.
No one mentioned the Green River. An unusual bit of testimony volunteered by the witness. Wonder why he had the Green River on his mind. Again, General Whitaker.
How long did you travel after the shooting of your brother before you came to where you stopped?
Well, it was on the 28th. I was captured on the 25th.
Do you know the point to which your regiment was going?
To Hopkinsville. From there to Cumberland River and crossed over to Nashville. When I got to my regiment, it was here in this city.
That's all I have, gentlemen.
Well, neither Judge Advocate Coyle nor the defense attorney seem interested in continuing with this witness.
Step down. The United States calls Alfred Hill. Do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
I do.
This man's testimony will need some analysis in a moment.
What is your name, rank, company, and regiment?
My name is Alfred Hill, and I'm a private in Company B of the 23rd VRC.
State whether you have ever seen the accused Jerome Clark, alias Sue Monday, and if so, under what circumstances?
I was at St. Mary's, or a little this side, and had taken a train there, and there was a citizen on a train that pointed him out and said, "There's Sue Monday."
And what was done then?
We fired into them from the train. Before I got my gun loaded, he's too far off, or I'd have shot him.
Is the man, Sue Monday, the prisoner now in court?
Yes, sir.
How many were with the party he was with?
I judge about 15. Some had on butternut clothes and colored jeans, and some had on black clothes.
How many times did he fire on the train?
I don't know how many times they shot at us, but we shot at them 10 or 15 rounds and then fell back to Lebanon to get more men, and when we got back, it was gone.
Did you see the accused again? And if so, under what circumstances?
Yes, sir. He came into New Haven and started robbing people, and some four or five of us went out and found horses and went after them.
How do you know they were guerrillas and were robbing?
Two men told me so. One man told me they took some money away from him, and another said they took his watch.
Did you follow them on that information, and if so, what occurred?
Me and the boys found horses and rode out of town and chased them away.
Now, how close were you to Clark, alias Monday?
About 200 yards, 250 yards. I couldn't say certain.
State whether they fired on you, and if so, where?
Yes, sir, they did. Just out of town.
How many were in their party?
Only five at New Haven. That's what the citizens said.
If I may interject, sir.
Certainly, sir.
Mr. Hill, could you positively swear it was the accused when he was 250 yards off?
He looked so much like a time I saw him at St. Mary's, I could swear it was him at the time. That was the only time I saw him.
How were they dressed, these five?
Some had on black clothes and some jeans or butternut. They wasn't all dressed alike.
How was the accused dressed?
I think he had on a jeans coat at New Haven.
And what kind of horse did he ride?
I couldn't tell the color of his horse right offhand.
Judge Coyle is now checking through his notes. We might point out here that the incident with the train may have occurred September 1st, 1864. The Louisville Journal reported in the following day's paper that Billy Magruder and 15 men held up the Lebanon train 6 miles from New Haven. Henry C. Magruder was also known as Billy Magruder. Jerome Clark was serving with John Hunt Morgan at this time near Greenville, Tennessee, and this was several months before George Prentice had even mentioned the name Sue Monday. Now, the defense wants to ask Hill a question.
Tell me, Mr. Hill, in what county is St. Mary's?
I don't know, sir. It's 6 or 8 miles from Lebanon.
How far was the accused from the train when he fired on you for the first time?
To the best of my knowledge, about 300 yards.
Did he get any closer?
Yes, sir. Some closer. Within 100 yards at one time, they drove him off and they got behind a barn and fired from a corner of it.
Was the train running at the time?
Yes, sir. It was a passenger train with women and children on it.
Could you feel safe in swearing positively that it was the accused when he was on horseback and not within 100 yards?
I couldn't swear positively that it was him, but he looked so much like him that I thought it was him at the time.
How far were you from the accused when the citizen pointed him out to you as Sue Monday?
I think about 100 yards, but I couldn't tell you what kind of a horse he was on.
Were they fighting then, you say?
Yes, sir.
And was there a great deal of fuss?
Yes, there was.
Could you see and recognize a man's features distinctly at 100 yards?
I could come pretty close to it.
I have no other questions at this time.
Step down.
The United States calls John Bryant.
John Bryant, take the stand. Do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
I do, yes, sir.
What is your name, occupation, and place of residence?
John Bryant. I'm a brakeman on the Bardstown Branch Railroad. My residence is in Bardstown, Kentucky.
Do you know the accused, Jerome Clark, alias Sue Monday? And if so, how long have you known him?
Yes, sir, I know him. It's been 8 or 10 months. I had no acquaintance, but always knew him.
How many times have you seen him, and under what circumstances?
6 or 8 times. I first saw him at Bloomfield. He was laying there and didn't do anything in the town but eat and drink.
Who was he with?
Merriman. There was 10 or 12. Some dressed in jeans, some in gray clothes, and some in blue jeans.
And when did you see him next?
At the time of the capture of the Bardstown train.
Tell all you know about the capture of that train.
He captured us. That's all I know.
How did he come to fire upon the train?
He first threw it off the tracks and then fired. He robbed some of the citizens and burnt one car.
Were there women and children on it?
Yes, sir. It was a passenger train.
Did you see the accused at the time present?
Yes, sir.
How many persons did he rob?
Some 3 or 4 were complaining of it. I never saw him rob anybody. I was helping put the engine back on the tracks.
And what did they do after capturing you?
They told us all to get out, and then they threw out the private baggage and burned the train. They took the mail bag and opened that, and then they left us.
When was this?
5, 6 months ago or longer.
When did you see him next?
On the road near Samuel Station in Nelson County, Kentucky, 6 miles this side of Bardstown. He wasn't doing anything in particular but traveling around.
Who was he with, and how were they dressed?
Magruder was there. I didn't notice their dress.
How many were in the party?
5 or 6. I saw him in Bardstown next, where they had a little fight with the 54th Kentucky, companies A and B. Some say there were 28 in the party, some say 25, some 30. I saw him there. I was in the loft of our house.
Most historians were to say later that it was most likely Bill Marion who staged the raid January 28, 1865 on the train, then had to flee from Bloomfield after an encounter with the 54th Kentucky. The skirmish could have started in Bardstown. Once again, however, the irrelevancy of time and place in the trial of one accused of being a guerrilla would continue to hamper any defense effort for Jerome.
What county is Bardstown in?
Nelson County. That was the last time I saw him. The last time I saw him in Bardstown was about 2 months ago.
Are you sure that when the accused and the party took the train, they fired upon it?
No, I didn't hear them fire. Some say they did.
How soon after were you thrown off the track? Did the accused and his party come up?
Well, they pounced on the train as soon as it ran off.
How do you know that they threw the train off?
I don't know, but the track was torn up.
How soon after did they come?
They were there in the bushes, and as soon as it stopped, they came out.
How was the accused dressed?
I don't remember.
The judge advocate seems a bit perplexed with the witness. It seemed a bit strange that Coyle asked the witness the same basic question twice, almost as if he was waiting for a particular answer he did not get the first time. Now the defense is ready.
Did you see the accused himself rob anybody?
No, sir. I saw Barry with a pistol in his hand tell them to put their money in their pockets, in the gorilla's pockets, that is.
At Samuel Station, did they commit any depredations?
No, sir. At Marion, they burned some cars.
Did you talk with the accused?
Yes, sir. I spoke a few words with him at Bloomfield one day.
Did you know him by any other name than Monday?
Yes, sir. Jerome Clark.
If you believe the version of how the name Sue Monday was coined by newspaper editor George Prentice, then you would have to believe Bryant only knew Marcellus Jerome Clark by his given name, because Prentice had not called Clark Sue Monday at the time of the train robbery or prior to it.
Have you any doubt that the man sitting there is the same man?
No, sir. I know that's the same man.
Have you stated all that you know of your own knowledge concerning robbery of the train, shooting, and so on?
Yes, sir. That's all I know.
Mr. Bryant, please step down and thank you for your testimony.
Your Honor, the United States rests.
Well, it would seem the case against Jerome was a bit lacking in hard evidence. The judge advocate insisted on this quick trial, however, saying he didn't need any substantial period of time to prepare because his witnesses just happened to be in Louisville. There seems to be a discussion going on now at the defense attorney's table. Jerome appears angry. Yes, he's having words with his lawyer. Now things are calming down a bit. The defense counsel and Judge Advocate Coyle are approaching the bench to discuss something with General Whitaker. The defense presentation should be very interesting. It would certainly clear up a great deal of discrepancy in Kentucky history if this trial would clearly determine which guerrilla bands did what. And there's good evidence, for instance, that Marion may have burned the Midway Depot and... Oh, wait now, the defense counsel is saying something.
If it pleased the commission, the accused would now like to make a statement which he has prepared in his defense.
Proceed.
I will state to the court the time I entered the Army. I first entered it on the 4th of July, 1861, joining Captain Morris's company from Henderson. The company was sent to Camp Burnett and was put into the 4th Kentucky Infantry. General Buckner sent me, or rather detailed me, to go with a detachment to Bowling Green, Kentucky. The detachment was from our regiment. We stayed there some 2 months, and then our company was converted into an artillery company under the command of Captain Graves. We stayed there 2 months longer until the fight was about to come off at Donelson when we moved down there. The fight lasted 4 days, and our force surrendered. I was sent with General Buckner to Louisville and was a prisoner here 6 months. After being exchanged, I was sent to Vicksburg to join the regular army in the infantry branch. I swapped places with a man and got into Kirkpatrick's 2nd Kentucky Battalion. I was under General Morgan also. I was in the fight at Chattanooga and Ringgold. Stayed there all winter and then went to Decatur, recruited a company, and General Lyons took command of us. We moved around through Georgia, North Carolina, and Virginia and made a raid on the salt works and had a fight there. After that, General Morgan got orders to go into Kentucky. We had our first fight at Mount Sterling near Lexington. We went on through, reached Cynthiana, had a fight, and captured Hobson. General Burbridge came the next morning about daylight and attacked us and by a charge of cavalry scattered and whipped us. I was wounded there in the hand. I joined Captain Alexander's company of 28 or 30 men to go south. We were camped near the Lebanon Railroad in Big Spring, some 5 or 6 miles distant from the road, and met a scout from Elizabethtown. We had a fight, and Alexander was shot through the head, and we were scattered. We were looking for a camp. One fellow said Nelson County would be a good place, so we went there and threw off our Confederate uniforms and put on civilian clothes. I stayed at a house there 2 or 3 weeks, and one day I went to a meeting and heard some ladies say there was one of Morgan's men, a rebel soldier, living in town. The man of the house where I stayed told me that everybody charged me with being a rebel soldier. I asked him what I'd better do. He said he didn't know, that Magruder with a scout of 8 or 10 men was near there, passing through, and I'd better go with him. I went with them, and the first place I was ever at was on the Lebanon Railroad. We captured the train and paroled the soldiers, and I think burned the train. I met Sam Beard at Point Gap and went with him. Got into a fight, and Beard was killed. I came back to Nelson County again and stayed around there for several months. I got orders through Captain Jones from Colonel Breckinridge to report to Paris, Tennessee. I saw Captain Jones, and he told us to go on to Paris. Brandenburg is where Metcalf got with us. When we got down below, we were bushwhacked and Magruder was wounded. He asked me to bring him back to Meade County and stay until he got well. I did so, and there's where I was captured. If you will send word to Camp Chase and other commands, well, I'm sure witnesses can be obtained in quick order to support me.
Gentlemen of the court, it seems the witnesses the accused had wished to call for his defense are some distance from the city, and therefore will be unable to get here immediately. The accused therefore wishes to...
Hold, hold! I don't wish to do anything but send to Camp Chase and other points to get my witnesses here. It won't take long. I'm a Confederate soldier.
Counsel, restrain your client. Clear the court. I want this room cleared.
Well, for some reason, the court-martial president does not want the accused or anyone else to hear what's going on. The general has gone into discussion with other members of the tribunal. Jerome Clark wants to prove, of course, that he is a legitimate Confederate soldier and is not guilty of the many crimes charged to him by the Louisville Journal. Well, now they're returning to the courtroom, and the general's about to speak.
After mature deliberation, the commission has decided concerning the desire of the accused to produce witnesses to establish that he was a Confederate soldier, that such evidence could not be material in this case. This is because the accused is charged with certain crimes which would cause even a Confederate soldier to be punished. We have also decided that unless the accused can refute the charge that he was detached from his command, it would be of no use to prove that he was a Confederate soldier, and such proof would not free him of the charge. The commission therefore allows the statement by the accused, marked A, to stand as his defense. This commission therefore will begin deliberations at once.
So the fate of Marcellus Jerome Clark is in the hands of the commission. Perhaps it would have been better if this trial had been much longer and could have included all the charges placed against Jerome by George Prentice in his newspaper. Prentice said Sue Monday was a female, and that Jerome Clark and Sue Monday were two different people. And he said it until Jerome was brought into the city for all to see. He would have the phantom-like character Sue Monday taking part in skirmishes many miles apart on the same day, or he would have Jerome Clark and Sue Monday in different parts of the state the same day. The evidence here has not been that strong against Jerome, but he has admitted being in the group that halted the train, and of course, the charge is being a guerrilla. Well, many consider General John Hunt Morgan a guerrilla, for that matter. Wait now, they're coming back in.
This commission is again in session. Marcellus Jerome Clark, alias Sue Monday, stand and face the bench. This court, after mature deliberations upon the testimony and evidence, finds the accused, Jerome Clark, alias Sue Monday, of the first specification, guilty. Of the second specification, guilty. And of the charge, guilty. This commission does therefore sentence Jerome Clark, alias Sue Monday, to be hanged by the neck until he is dead, at such time and place as the Major General commanding the Department of Kentucky may direct, 2/3 of the members of the commission concurring in the sentence. This military commission of the United States is adjourned.
Of course, the time and place for the execution are already known. The order of death, concurring with the findings of the commission, was dated March 13, 1865, or one day before the trial, as indicated earlier. The transcript of the trial of Sue Monday would be kept a secret for decades. People of Jerome Clark's era would not know, for instance, that General Walter Whitaker president of the commission which tried Jerome, would serve as defense counsel for Henry C. Magruder. Neither would they know that in Magruder's trial, prosecutor Coyle would claim Jerome and Magruder murdered a Union soldier December 29, 1865, in Nelson County. As you may recall, in Jerome's court-martial, Hiram Meadows testified that Jerome murdered his brother on December 28, 1865. The location of that murder would have been over 100 miles from Nelson County. Young E. Allison wrote in the Kentucky Historical Society Register that Jerome Clark thought he was to be shot and was surprised to learn from the Reverend Dr. J.J. Talbot of St. John's Episcopal Church that he would be hanged. This report can also be found in the Louisville Journal report on the trial of Sue Monday. However, as we mentioned, the trial of Sue Monday was kept secret. Allison even stated there had been no trial. His account of the hanging of Jerome was based on what he saw, however. Allison also says Jerome asked to be prayed for March 15, 1865, the day he would die. He also says letters were dictated to his foster mother, sister, cousin, and his sweetheart. Allison says a lock of hair was sent with each. The Louisville Journal, Young E. Allison, and other sources report this as the text of the letter from Jerome to the young woman at Crow's Pond, Kentucky.
My dear Sarah, I have to inform you of the sad fate which awaits your true friend. I am to suffer death this afternoon at 4 o'clock. I send you from my chains a message of true love. And as I stand on the brink of the grave, I tell you I do truly, fondly, and forever love you. I am ever truly yours, Jerome Clark.
The scaffold had been completed by noon at the site of previous hangings in the block bounded by Broadway, Magazine, 17th and 18th Streets. Allison says Jerome was baptized at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Four companies of troops marched into the street about 3:15. The 30th Wisconsin Band struck up the Dead March when Jerome appeared a few minutes later. He was brought to the scaffold in a carriage. He was seen resting his head on the side of the carriage as he shielded his eyes from the blazing sun with a white handkerchief. The crowd was estimated at better than 10,000. Marcellus Jerome Clark, his legs shackled, walked slowly up the steps of the scaffold. He must have noticed the crudely built wooden coffin under the structure. His lips moved as he walked, and witnesses said it appeared he was saying the same phrase over and over again in a whisper to himself.
Lord, have mercy on my soul. Lord, have mercy on my soul. Lord, have mercy upon my soul.
He stood on the trap door of the scaffold. He wore a dark blue cavalry jacket, dark cashmere trousers, and boots cut down to fit like shoes. His long dark hair fell in curls to his shoulders. On his jacket, Jerome wore a single row of Kentucky State buttons. The Provost Marshal, Captain George Swope of the 5th Indiana Cavalry, was in charge of the execution.
Marcellus Jerome Clark, alias Sue Mundy, you have been tried and convicted of being a guerrilla. You have been sentenced to death. Is there anything you wish to say before this sentence is carried out?
I am a regular Confederate soldier. I am not guilty of the murders charged to me. I hate no one. I love everybody. I hope I will go to heaven. I believe in and die for the Confederate cause.
Jerome knelt with Reverend Talbot for a final prayer. Then a small black cap was removed from his head, tossed under the scaffold, and replaced by a white hood. As Jerome stood before the pressing throng, someone could be heard counting.
One, two, three.
The trapdoor was flung open, and Jerome's weight fell against the rope, but his neck was not broken. He fought the noose furiously. The crowd screamed as it seemed he would break the rope. Then the stillness of death. Sue Monday was a legend. The corpse was allowed to hang in full view for 20 minutes. When the rope was cut and the body lowered to the ground, the crowd surged forward, grabbing buttons, pieces of clothing, bits of the rope. Two men fought over his cap and were arrested. Provost Marshal Swope took the cap. As the crowd started to disperse, a large, snorting bull suddenly appeared in the middle of the street at 10th and Broadway.
There was a near riot as some who had pistols fired at the animal. Those in the rear of the crowd feared Sue Monday's men had come to town to seek revenge. Finally, the bull was shot down. The excitement subsided, and the people went home. It wasn't until September 1865 that Henry C. Magruder got well enough to stand trial. He was hanged October 29th that year. Historians say they hanged Magruder behind the prison walls at 10th and Broadway, but relatives tell the story of Magruder being granted a final request, that he be returned to Bullitt County to die. He's buried on a hill not far from Lebanon Junction. Descendants say his last words were, "Has anybody got a cigar?" He took a few puffs from the cigar, handed the butt to his mother, and was hanged. His mother took the body home in a horse-drawn wagon. Henry Metcalf, often called Metcalf, was tried and convicted, but his sentence was commuted. It may never be known exactly why. Judge Coyle was quoted as saying it was due to mitigating circumstances. Letter-writing campaigns and petitions also resulted in the death sentence of one-armed Sam Berry being commuted. He spent the rest of his days in prison, however. The trial of Sue Monday tells many stories. It is a story of trial by the press. It is a story of the injustices of war and wartime courts-martial. It is a story of how politics were played by the military more than 100 years ago. And it's the story of a young man, 20 years old, perhaps a murderer and thief, a guerrilla, if you will, perhaps not. Jerome Clark was a Confederate soldier, but was not given the opportunity to relate the fact to his actions. Well, you hear it said many times about many people, but if the South had won the war, Marcellus Jerome Clark would have been a national hero. As it was, however, he was Jerome Clark, alias Sue Monday.
No witness was sent far from Camp Chase for Clark. His trial had been held by the press. The court-martial was a formality, and the gallows determined the rest. Clark said aloud that he fought for the South, but the hangman did not care. Clark rode singing into battle. He faced death with a prayer. To his sweetheart he sent a lock of his hair. A lock of his hair.
The trial of Sue Monday, based on the actual transcript of the court-martial of Marcellus Jerome Clark on file in the National Archives. Jay Sumner was heard as Sue Monday, William Purser as Captain Lewis O. Marshall, Ron Derling as Major Cyrus J. Wilson, Gene Hirsch as General Walter Whitaker, Clint Vaught Jr. as Judge Advocate William H. Coyle, James S. DeSell was heard as the defense attorney, Chuck Rubin as Private William Bradley, Paul Lindsay as Private Hiram Meadows, Randall Jones as Private Alfred Hill, Fritz Wolf as John Bryant, Lynn King as Henry Magruder, Charles Stiles as Captain George Swope, Jarl Mohn as the court reader. The Ballad of Sue Monday was sung by Vicki Spellman. Original guitar background music composed and played by Don Good. Sources included the National Archives, Kentucky Historical Society Record, Filson Club Quarterly, interviews with Marcellus Jerome Clark of Anchorage, Kentucky, great-nephew of Marcellus Jerome Clark, and the research records of the author. This is Bob Watson, author and narrator, thanking you for listening.